Now today, as we come to the 29th psalm, we come to a nature psalm. It's not the first one that we've had. We had in Psalm 8, "When I consider the heavens, the work of thy fingers, the moon and stars that thou hast made." And that's a night psalm. It's to be read on a good, clear night. And then Psalm 19 was a nature psalm. "Heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament showeth his handiwork. And the sun's like a bridegroom." That's to be read at high noon. And it's a daytime psalm. But Psalm 29 is a psalm for the storm, because this is a psalm that describes a storm. And here you have, during a storm, the gloom of a tempest. The thunder rolls, the lightning flashes, and there's terror on every side. This is a storm like several years ago, I don't know how long ago, wasn't too long ago, when Camille hit the Gulf Coast down the other side of New Orleans, around Gulfport, Mississippi. And that hurricane hurled its might against the coast there and did millions of dollars worth of damage. And in an apartment there, a group of couples decided to have a hurricane party. It was a great big beer bus. They all began to drink and I suppose got drunk. And it's too bad they didn't read Psalm 29. That's the psalm for Camille. And I think most of those people were killed when that storm hit. Well, if you're really afraid of a storm, there's a very pragmatic reason then for you to read this psalm. It's a message for the time of a storm down here in nature. And many folk who listen to this program are in a section of the country where even today they're subject to storms like this. Now, the structure of this psalm is quite interesting. Fact of the matter is, we have the structure of it, and I'd like to look at it like this. First, the structure of the psalm, the setting of the psalm, and the subject of the psalm. Now, in Hebrew poetry, and this is Hebrew poetry of the highest order, Ewald said this psalm is elaborated with a symmetry of which no more perfect specimen exists in Hebrew. And Delitzsch called this psalm the Psalm of the Seven Thunders. And he mentioned the fact that it's the time of a thunderstorm. And Dr. Pironi said this psalm is a magnificent description of a thunderstorm, its mighty march from north to south, the desolation and terror which it causes, the peal of thunder, the flash of lightning, the gathering fury, and lull of the elements are vividly depicted. And end of that quotation. So this is a psalm that is a psalm of Hebrew poetry and describing a storm. Now, Hebrew poetry is not attained by rhyming. That's the way we get poetry today, words that sound alike. Here's an example. It's one of these little ditties. "I shoot the hippopotamus with bullets made of platinum. If I use lead ones, his hide was sure to flatten them." Now, that's our kind of poetry. That's not exactly Shakespeare, but it's poetry for us today. Now, Hebrew poetry is attained by what is known as parallelism. That is, repeating an idea in a different way and generally amplifying it, enlarging upon it. Now, this psalm sweeps along with all the freedom and majesty of a storm. There's sort of a lilting triumph here, a glorious abandon, a courageous exultation. Now, I divide this psalm here into the prologue and the epilogue and the subject. The first two verses are a prologue. And when you read those, it goes like this. Here's the prologue. "Give unto the Lord, O ye mighty, give unto the Lord glory and strength. Give unto the Lord the glory due his name. Worship the Lord in the beauty of holiness." Now, David here lifts our thoughts to the very highest. Now, the epilogue is the last two verses. And here you have in verses 10 and 11 this language, "The Lord sitteth upon the flood, yea, the Lord sitteth king forever. The Lord will give strength unto his people. The Lord will bless his people with peace." Now, you see, that storm with all of its fury lashed across the land. But Jehovah was still in control. And the storms of life break today, but he's still in control. Now we come to the subject, and from verses 3 to 10, you have here the voice of the Lord. And seven times the voice of the Lord is mentioned. Verse 3, the voice of the Lord is upon the waters. Verse 4, the voice of the Lord is powerful. The voice of the Lord is full of majesty. The voice of the Lord breaketh the cedars. Yea, the Lord breaketh the cedars of Lebanon. Now, that is the division that we have. Now, we've said a word about the beginning and the end, and notice the setting here of the psalm. Now, David wrote this psalm, and he was an outdoor man. He was not bottled up in an office or not held down to a throne. He was not outdoors here, however, because when this storm came, he was in Jerusalem. Jerusalem was beautiful for situation. He was up at Mount Zion, the highest point, had a palace of cedar. He could view the whole land, and he could look up yonder to the northeast, and he could see this cloud that was beginning to gather, and a storm was getting ready to break. I think that most of us are acquainted with the geography of the Holy Land, and if you're not, why don't you turn right now to the map in the back of your Bible? And we're told here something about the waters. The voice of the Lord is upon the waters. The God of glory thundereth. The Lord is upon many waters. Now, the Mediterranean Sea, as you look at your maps on your left, and yonder in the north, there is the Lebanon, two ranges of mountains, the Anti-Lebanon Range, and then there's Mount Carmel up there, Haifa, Mount Hermon, and the Sea of Galilee. Now you have on the east, Sea of Galilee, Valley of Esdraelon, Jordan is there to the right, and to the east, the Dead Sea. And then there is Mount Ebal and Gerizim and Samaria and the rugged terrain that's immediately north. Bethel and Ai and Anathoth, right north of Jerusalem. Now you're in Jerusalem, and to the west, again, you see Joppa. To the east, you see Jericho, and to the south there's the wilderness of Judea, and it's frightful and ominous. And David and Amos knew how to survive in that wilderness. There was a bishop from San Francisco several years ago. He wasn't able to survive there. In fact, that's where he perished. David would have known how to have gotten by.